438, 437, 436. Can the Jaguars make something happen? Grinnell under center. Sends Keenan in motion from the near to the far side. He'll take the snap and drop back to throw. Pressure coming. He's jumping out to the near side. Pump action. Cuts across the 50. Breaks a tackle at the 45. He's at the 40. Mark Grinnell running to the far sideline. Turns the corner. 35-30. Down to the 25. An inside move. Leaping for the 21. Mark Grinnell with a masterful run of 29 yards. And the clock continues to run.
Here's the game, ladies and gentlemen. With no timeouts left, the Jaguars will not be able to stop the clock. Gerard barks out the signals in the shotgun. Takes the snap. Drops. Now he's going to run. And David's going to get in and more. He's at that 25-yard line. Stays on his feet. 20. There he goes. 15. And he's down at the 10. How about that one?
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
If nothing else, Jeff, Jaguar fans have that 15 seconds or so at the start of Jaguars Today when they can remember the good times a little bit more.
If I remember right, that was David's scramble at Pittsburgh for the playoff game.
Correct.
In which there was a hold that did not get called.
Brad Meester may have engulfed a player with seven arms. I mean, he had him wrapped up. Meester laughed about it afterwards. Hey, it's not a hold if they don't call it,
right? That's right. It wasn't. What a great moment.
What a devastating call that would have been, right? It was fourth and short for them at that point in time.
The thing I remember most about that game, I think that was the game that Rasheen Mathis was just on fire.
He was amazing against Pittsburgh both times that year. Had big plays. I want to say maybe even had a pick six against him in each game that season. But yeah, he was pretty tremendous. And what I loved about, I made both trips to Pittsburgh that season, was seeing, I think particularly in the regular season game, how many of those greatest fans in the world, Pittsburgh Steelers, were jetting for those vehicles mid-third quarter. Man, it was a ghost town in Heinz Field.
It's amazing how new stadiums sometimes have the ability to sterilize a fan base. You know, because Three River Stadium used to be just unbelievable. I mean, played a lot of games there early in my career. And that was back when the Pittsburgh Steelers weren't great. But the crowd was phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal. And they were there. Now, I mean, I'm talking, right, they were in the seats the entire game. The other place that happened to was Philadelphia. The Vet was a place that, I don't want to say you feared because you didn't fear anything. But you knew when you went to the Vet that was a crowd that had one particular trait about it, and that they were nasty.
Right.
The new stadium, Lincoln Financial, and I think it's still called Lincoln Financial. They changed names so much now with sponsorship. But the new stadium and the new experience at Philadelphia doesn't come close to touching what it used to be like at the Vet.
Do you think it's a – what are your thoughts? I don't want to, you know, put you in a box here. How do you feel about fan bases that have the reputation where if you are a visiting fan and you show up in the opposing team's jersey, you're taking your physical well-being in your own hands?
Well, I think that that's over the top. But now if you're a fan that wears a visiting team's jersey and you act like a moron, then you probably deserve some of what you're going to get. Perfect example, this past weekend, we're in Baltimore. And there's a fan, you know, we're right at, you know, fan level. I mean, the fans can literally, from their seats, can reach up and meet. We can high-five each other.
Right.
I mean, we're that close to the Ravens fans. And there's a couple stadiums that are like that. New England Patriots has a visiting radio booth right there kind of amongst the fans where their windows are open and they can talk to you, et cetera. And they have police guys that are stationed right outside the window so there's no issues. Baltimore's like that. There's a couple other places like that. But there's not very many that are like that. So at Baltimore, we're sitting there, we're watching the game. And all of a sudden, it was in the second half, there was a guy that was out front, young guy, you know, probably mid-20s, wearing a Maurice Jones-Drew jersey. And he starts just, you know, MFing the crowd and giving them the finger. And I'm sitting there going, maybe this is the kind of guy that you read about,
right,
that gets beat up at a stadium. Because, I mean, he was just obnoxiously rude. And so I'm sitting here going, okay, you're an opposing fan. The game's still, I mean, it's not like the game's over. I mean, this game is still tight. I mean, it's a 5-point game. And this young man is acting like a donkey. I mean, complete donkey. And on top of that, He's given everybody the finger with a Maurice Jones-Drew jersey, and he's got a Pittsburgh Steelers cap on.
Nice. Oh, yeah. He's devoted. He's
really?
Hardcore. Well, maybe he just thought that would get under their skin more if the whole Jags angled it.
So I'm trying to think. Is he a real Jaguars fan that's trying to get their goat with the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, snow hat?
Right.
Or is he a Pittsburgh Steelers fan who is wearing the Jaguars Maurice Jones-Drew jersey just to get him fired up?
The pull for the Ravens opponent. Then.
Exactly.
Right. Whichever the case.
Couldn't figure it out.
I who knows? But I would agree with you. But if you're just a fan who wants to go and take in the game in the opposing team's jersey, we see it here. You know, nobody bothers those
have
people.
At it.
Don't be an ass or a donkey, as some might describe it. And, you know, you'll probably be okay, but there are a couple of places that if you wear the opposing team's colors, the reputation is doesn't matter how you're acting.
No.
You know, you could be, and I agree with you. That's
over the top.
That's just, I mean.
I give credit to the Ravens fans in this instance because they showed a lot of restraint.
Did they?
A lot of restraint. And finally, a security guard came up, grabbed this guy and hauled him off, and the security guard almost had to go put suplex on him. Because the guy was actually being a little, you know, one of those things where the security guy comes, you know, it's just like in the old fight. You know, all of a sudden you have words with somebody, and all of a sudden somebody comes there to break it up, and you know, like a policeman or a security guard, and all of a sudden then you start acting even tougher.
Right, because you got that buffer.
I mean, come on. This guy started doing that. I'm like, you know what? They should have just tore him a new one.
Oh, my goodness. All right, well, we're going to get into Blake's play. We're going to get into the offensive line play, the team as a whole. The defense had another solid effort for themselves. But in terms of what you're talking about a moment ago with Jeff Prosser, the availability, how badly Blake wants to play in this game. You don't know anything more about this injury than what has been reported publicly at this point in time. But I would think that the guys in the locker room have a pretty good feel for who Blake Bortles is by this point in the season, right? I mean, he's been starting for 12 weeks now. But you do think it's important that he shows his willingness to not abandon the troops that, look, it's not fun. You got two games left, even though they're two very winnable games for this football team. It's just a matter of pride that he wants to be out there.
Well, I think it's pride. I think it's wanting to prove to your teammates that, hey, look, in the future, I'm always going to be here. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. I'm a tough guy.
No matter how many times I get hit, now I've been hit a bunch.
Exactly. You know, and if you're going to be one of the great ones, because the great ones, the biggest thing that the great ones have is availability. You know, so you need to prove that you're going to be available. And I think as a quarterback, I think this is a big statement game for Blake Bortles from that capacity. In a big way. I mean, you want to show to your teammates, hey, look, guys, I'm here. I'm going to be tough. I'm a quarterback. But at the same time, I'm not like Tony Eason, like John Hanna said, that, you know, he wears a dress. You know what I mean?
Right.
Prove to your guys that you're tough if you can. Now, if it's risking any kind of future long-term health condition, absolutely not. You should not play. But if you can, you find a way to do it.
All right, here's Jeff Logman. I'm Mike Dempsey, along with Fat Tony and Lauren Brooks. We're Jaguars today on this Tuesday. Tweet the show in typical fashion at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, Logs56, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. Any or all of the above will work. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today. Pay attention to this question. It's very specific. Which positions do you feel do not need an upgrade? Which positions do you go into this offseason saying, you know what, I feel pretty good about what we've got there? For instance, defensive tackle, I think, would be one that you would probably say that. You could always upgrade any position. But in terms of the Jags, you can't fix 22 spots. Mm-hmm. So which ones do you feel the most comfortable about? That's what we'll ask people about today. And we invite you to weigh in. Also today, Tony knows how much I love a good haiku contest.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
We haven't done one of these
They're
in a while.
They're fun. Right. I got a pair of tickets to Thursday night's game, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. We'll draw probably tomorrow. We'll determine a winner. But you can email me at MikeD@1010XL.com. You can tweet me at MD_1010XL, or you can post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. A simple haiku that's Jaguar themed. That's 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables for those of you who haven't thought about haikus since senior English class. Okay. So a Jaguar themed haiku tomorrow. We'll go through some of the best submissions.
Give me an example of a haiku.
Off the top of my head, I mean, it's...
We got one that's been sent in.
Have we? All right, go give them an example.
From Duval Doom, Titans suck forever. Why is mascot a raccoon? Stupid Tennessee.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, it's five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. Three lines, simple. You can fit that in a tweet. You can email me at MikeD@1010XL.com or post it on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll go through. If we get some today, we may mention a few, but we'll select a winner tomorrow, and you'll have either tomorrow or Thursday to pick up your tickets to the final home game of the season against the Tennessee Titans. We're going to get into that O-line play coming up next. We're going to hear from Gus Bradley, a little bit from Blake Bortles as well throughout the course of the day. Logs?
News, Denard Robinson officially goes on IR.
As we knew his season was over, but that we'll look for a corresponding roster move at some point with the Jags activating somebody to the 53-man roster as well. So share your thoughts. Loggy's here. You can pick his brain at 641-1010. Going to class every Tuesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Tony, you know this one. Bootylicious by Destiny's Child. I'm hoping that this has something to do with a question about upgrades.
I thought this was Fleetwood Mac.
It sounds like, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like White Winged Dove, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like, but it's not.
Sings a song, sounds like she's singing.
Yeah. It does sound like that. I thought the same thing. But I knew what it was, Bootylicious by Destiny's Child. Does this have to do with upgrades?
It does not.
See? If you look at my Facebook posting, you'd say it absolutely does, because I've got that picture of Beyonce with the gold upgrade chain in her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just go check it out. Do yourself a favor. Go to Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. I'm a fan. How can you not be? All right. So I don't know. Otherwise, I don't know Bootylicious. where you're going with that?
I have way too much fun with these.
I don't know. It is Blake's destiny to play every game this year. I have no idea. So
you'll figure it out along in a little bit.
We will, yep, as we go along. All right, let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley. I want to hear what he has to say, Jeff, and then I want your thoughts on some of the same topics that he covers. This is yesterday during his Monday press conference, as the Jags have a short week getting ready for the Tennessee Titans.
All right, today a unique situation this week as far as our practice schedule with the game coming up on Thursday. So we're going to have two different meetings today. 3 o'clock, just to kind of review what took place on Sunday. They'll split up, go to their position meetings, and then we'll bring everybody back together, and then introduce Tennessee and the game plan and the initial game plan for tonight's walkthrough. But after looking at the tape, it was disappointing, I think, at times when you looked at it, and some of the opportunities that we had where the ball was placed on the field and didn't take advantage of some of those. But, you know, some good things, too, I think, offensively, defensively, and special teams. But we got to continue to improve. I think we're at the point, just like special teams, what I like about this team and our staff was that we continue to compete. Here we are at this point in time in the season. We found a way to do some things on special teams-wise, and I think that same mindset will carry over to both offensively and defensively as well.
All right, not a whole lot there into specifics.
No, but let me expand on something here, because I think he is alluding to something that to me was probably, if you look at the game and you want to have teal-colored glasses on, the one thing that I thought was exceptionally positive was, you've got a 2-11 football team. You're going on the road against a team that has everything in the world to play for at their place.
Two touchdown underdog.
Absolutely. And they've been playing really, really good football. I mean, scoring nearly 30 points a game in three or four games prior to that. And you start the game out, and it starts off in a horrific fashion. You have a blocked punt for a touchdown. Your percentages of winning a game in which there's a special team score by the opponent is almost completely null. I mean, almost zero. But you bounced back. You responded with the first drive offensively on a field goal drive to at least put points on the board. You answered the bell. And then you fought. You came back out in the second half, and then defensively you continued to fight to make it a 5-point game. You fought hard. And how many teams that are 2-11 on the road that have not scored hardly any points offensively continue to fight and continue to battle the entire game?
And that to me, and look, we know that Gus Bradley's job is not in danger, okay? But for the fans who are questioning that and they're calling for that, that is, I think, to me, maybe the strongest point about Gus Bradley, right, is that he's been able to keep a group of players together believing that they're, even though some of them have to know they're not going to be part of the long term, a lot of them feel like they're going to be, and they feel enough that they see enough that they're on the right path that they continue to give that kind of effort under these circumstances. You can say, well, they're getting paid millions of dollars. They should all give that kind of effort. Okay.
Yeah, but it's got to go beyond that.
In a perfect world, you should. Okay. But we know it's not a perfect world. So.
No, and that, to me, that's the greatest thing that I have taken away from this game. Also going back to the Giants game, because you were down by such a wide margin at halftime of the Giants game, and to battle back and win that game, and then to, play well the first half against the Texans, and then you just kind of had a terrible second half offensively, which is understandable to some extent because of the offense's youth. But, I mean, to go to Baltimore against a team that had everything in the world to play for and to play that hard and to continue to play that hard throughout the course of the game and to still try to find a way offensively. I mean, they battled now. They weren't good, but at least they battled. I mean, you saw an offense that was making plays occasionally, but just not enough. But, I mean, to me, if you're going to pull one thing away from it, it's that you've got a team that's playing hard for a head coach in an organization that really had every reason to probably not give it all. You know, to I don't want to say quit, but I've been on some teams now that the effort wasn't there.
Start thinking about where you're going on vacation.
That's right. You know, so biggest positive right there.
All right. Well, Gus Bradley now getting on to one of the negatives, the sacks. Obviously, way too many sacks being given up by this team. And we have yet to talk about this, but let's hear what Gus said in terms of where you lay the blame for some of these sacks in this football game.
Well, it's tough. You look at them, there's some three-step drops in there where they covered us pretty well. And, you know, the line's cutting, and, you know, those are types that you look at Blake and say, okay, you just got to get rid of it. But I think to Blake's defense is he's made some plays happen after there's been a breakdown, you know, whether he gets out of the pocket, and he made a big play to Hearns yesterday doing that, that I think that at times when it's not right there, he'll try to extend the play, and a couple times yesterday that got us in trouble with some sacks. So if you break it down, there's a couple on the offensive line, you know, two or three. Three probably on Blake, and then the other two, the screen play down in the red zone. You know, you'd like to have Blake throw it away, but the defensive lineman was on him so fast. It's one of those things that can happen. So, you know, I think it's spread out, but, you know, offensive line, running back, and Blake, again, we've said this before where it's kind of spread out amongst them.
All right, before you assign what you saw on film in terms of who you think was most responsible for these sacks, I think Gus makes a good point in we sit there and say, we're watching the game on Sunday. You're probably thinking the same thing. There are times when, man, you just got to get rid of the football. That clock's got to be sped up. You can tell on those occasions. Or there's one where Terrell Suggs is coming up the field, Tony, right? And
got Luke, a great get-off.
Luke Jokel is driving him, though, up past the pocket where you want your quarterback to step up, and Blake's trying to backpedal mm-hmm. to avoid the pressure.
We talked about that last week with Blake. It looked like he was finally moving forward a little bit in the pocket. He did a little bit of it in the game Sunday again, but on
not
that
enough.
Play, he tried to bail to the side and
yeah, not enough.
Ran right into Suggs.
Right. But Gus makes a point that, look, we want this guy has certain escapability and ability to make plays on the run, and we don't want to neuter that either.
Right.
So how do you encourage that and that natural instinctive play, but at the same time, sometimes you got to live to fight another down. Now, I thought that was a good point, right?
Yeah, delicate balance.
It is, especially for a rookie quarterback. Now, Gus said 2 to 3 on Blake. Sounded like at least three, mm-hmm. all right, because he even included the rollout. How many on Blake? How many on the O-line? How many on blitz pickup? In other words, running backs. And then how many do you just say, you know what? There's really not a whole lot you could have done there. You've got Suggs and Dumervil, who are two of the best pass rushers in the league. How would you split up the blame here?
Well, I mean, you definitely have to say, look, I mean, they got really two really good players. I mean, two of the best that probably in a game today on the outside in Suggs and Dumervil. But if you had to assign blame on all eight, I'd go 3-3-2. Three on a quarterback, three on the offensive line, two on the backs. And I got them written down right here.
Do tell. Please.
Okay.
Go.
The first one was a set-up screen play in which Blake took the sack. when he turns around after kind of trying to sell the throw away from the screen, when he turns around, Darryl Smith has already disrupted Storm Johnson. And so when he turns around, what you'd like to have the quarterback do in that instance is to see that Darryl Smith has totally disrupted it, for the quarterback to turf it at the feet
throw
of the running back,
yep.
Plays over, line back up again, because that was, I think, a second and nine at the nine. Then you can line up and play again. He didn't do that. He took the sack. Well, now all of a sudden you're looking at third and 19, which is, you know, now you're starting to back up all of a sudden to make it a long field goal. So the first one I would put on the quarterback, but also give credit to Darryl Smith for making one heck of a play.
He made a good play, but people, I think, initially looked at that and said, wow, Belanco just got blown up by Jernigan.
Oh, he's letting him go.
He let him go, right? He's holding him for a beat, and then he lets him go so he can loop outside and become that wall of blocking for the screenplay. All right, mm-hmm. So on to the next one.
Well, the next one is the third and 19. I think it is third and 19.
Very next play.
Very next play, and that was on the offensive line. Clearly, that's got to be better. They were soft across the board. The third sack was a three-step game, and they were covered. Okay, and when you run a three-step game, if they're covered, two things can happen. One, you take off and run straight ahead, or two, throw it away. Okay, as a quarterback, he ate it. Okay, tried to extend the play, but when you try to extend a play on a three-step drop, the offensive line are cutting. So the rush is going to be slowed up temporarily. Okay, but they're going to regain their footing and be back on their feet again. So if you do run, it needs to be straight ahead. You can't run out to the sides, because most of the places that they're cutting are on the edges. And when they cut on the edges, you're not taking them out of the play completely. They're just out of the play for just a short bit of a time. So that one I put on the quarterback, because if it's three-step, get rid of it, run straight ahead, do something.
Okay.
Okay. You can't fault your offensive line, because they're sitting there going, I have to block for a short period of time and get their hands down. So that one I put on the quarterback. The other one was Terrell Suggs came off the edge, got a great get off. Great get off. He's lined up real wide and timed the snap up perfectly. He's a great player. That happens, but Storm Johnson, the running back. Now look, you can criticize the play design and Jed Fish all you want on this, because I don't like the fact that you've got Storm Johnson blocking T. Sizzle on the edge all by himself. But look, that happens sometimes. And if it happens, you don't have to be Maurice Jones-Drew against Sean Merriman.
You got to get a piece.
Just slow him down a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. And Storm, wanting to execute the play action, comes forward for the play fake. Okay. Well, look, it's Terrell Suggs, for God's sake. Who gives a crap about the play action when you know he got to get off? You saw it. So you should turn right away and go right to Suggs right now. He tries to run the play fake. He gets too far up inside. Suggs has already passed
right.
him. The play never has a chance. That one's on the running back.
Gotcha.
Another sack was on the offensive line, clearly. Another one, it was, you remember C.J. Mosley got a sack?
Yes.
That particular play was they gave him a cover two look, and then on the snap of the ball, they rolled one of the safeties down to cover Mercedes Lewis, who was running a crossing route and played man-to-man. When Blake Bortles drops back, and I showed this one last night on Jaguars All Access, his head was all over the place. He takes a snap, he looks left, he looks center, he looks right, looks back to center, and then his eyes drop down to the rush. You could tell that he had a difficult time deciphering exactly what the coverage was and where to go with the football. But in that situation, you've got four men up front that are rushing. They're blocked. I mean, they're blocked. Protection's great. And then all of a sudden, C.J. Mosley, who is a man on the back, sees that the back stays in to be a part of a slide protection, five-man protection. So he does what we call a hug-up blitz. When the running back is being covered man-to-man, he stays in and blocks. You can become an extra blitzer. And C.J. Mosley comes in. He's completely unblocked. But the ball's got to be out. It's man coverage. He had Mercedes open crossing the field because the safety's trying to show cover, too, is late coming down to cover Mercedes. If you choose not to go with him and you know it's man-to-man, pick a guy that you think is going to give you the best chance of winning. If it's me, I'm probably picking Marquise Lee, okay, or I'm picking Allen Hurns or Cecil Short. Take your pick. There's three of them, man coverage.
But give him a chance one-on-one.
Just give him a chance.
Right.
Give him a chance. Calculate a risk, throw the football. So that's on the quarterback. Another one, he escaped the pocket early, had a good pocket, could have just slid a little bit to his left, made a throw somewhere or thrown the ball away. That one I put on the quarterback. And then the last one was a game in which Jordan Todman was back coming out late. He's got a tight end, and so you got Mercedes Lewis staying in. Todman releases to that side. They run a game, so I either put that one on Todman or I put that on Mercedes Lewis. So according to my account, two possibly on the backs, three on the quarterback, three on the offensive line.
All right, there you have it. Just kind of, you know, the shame is you've got enough blame to go around for eight sacks, but it's not all one thing.
Oh, it's a little bit everything. You know, and look, it's easy to come out and say offensive line is terrible. It's eight sacks. Just like the week before, J.J. Watt has three sacks. Offensive line is terrible. Come on. It's easy to say the offensive line. Take the hard route, okay? Watch it, figure it out, and then you can truly understand the truth.
We're going to get a little deeper into that coming up because this is a big talking point, I think, right now among Jaguar fans. So we'll continue that conversation.
Just really quickly, I know Ryan O'Halloran just tweeted this out that Bortles is out of the boot today. So that's,
well, that's good.
Probably good news for him looking at Thursday.
Absolutely. So the latest on Blake Bortles, midfoot sprain, obviously going to try to do everything he can to play.
If he doesn't play.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you on this Tuesday afternoon, 641-1010. If you'd like to get in, you got a question for Professor Loggeman, bring it to the table. We'll hear a little bit more from Gus talking specifically about that offensive line performance and maybe break it down player by player exactly what's going on up front right now. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, I love the haikus. I love them. I love them. I love them. You can submit a haiku, a Jaguar-themed haiku, to win a pair of tickets to Thursday's game, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida, by tweeting at MD_1010XL, emailing MikeD@1010XL.com, or posting it in the thread we have set up at Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Here's a succinct one for you, Tony. Jacksonville Jaguars, we believe in victory. Tennessee Titans suck. See? All that fits perfectly.
That's good stuff.
Tennessee Titans suck. That's six. Sorry, Nick.
Is the theme about Blake's foot?
Is the theme about, what do you mean? The theme of the haiku contest?
No. The theme of
the music.
Oh.
Show. Yes, it is. But, okay. You know, Ryan O'Halloran kind of ruined it when he said Bortles is out of the boot after I played Bootylicious.
Oh, I get it. Bootylicious. I get it.
He totally ruined it.
Foot.
Correct. Exactly. Good job, Tony.
Yeah.
Trampled
Jeff was
foot
about to get
trampled.
It, too.
Yeah.
He was right on there.
Yeah, I'm really good at that game.
Well, he kicked the boot.
For you.
The boot's gone, but the foot, and the foot comes out.
Yep. Been...
Boots stink, I can tell you that.
Have you worn the boot?
Yeah, I actually I wore a boot when I had the Liz Frank, and then the last couple years that I played, I had plantar fasciitis, which is, you know, the big tendon, whatever it is, it runs along the bottom of your arch of your foot and then attaches back in your heel. And so at night I used to have to sleep in a boot to keep my ankle in a flexed position so that when I woke up the next morning, I wasn't having to re-stretch out my calf and then it would immediately stress out your plantar fascia. So I used to have to sleep in double boots. And that's the most uncomfortable thing in the world. Can you imagine sleeping every night in ski boots?
Sleep on your back, I would assume, right?
I don't know. Tell me a way that's comfortable.
I didn't say it would be comfortable. I'm just trying to think. I'm like a side sleeper. I couldn't imagine wearing the immobilizing boots if you're doing that.
Stinks.
No matter how you're doing it, probably not the way you want to go to bed. All right, let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley on the O-line, and then we're going to get Jeff into your kind of critique of how each guy's doing right now. This is what Gus Bradley had to say about those guys yesterday.
Last week, we felt like the offensive line played better. Now, this week, we get into it, and there was – that's a very – I mean, one of the guys had, what, Duerville had 16 sacks, another one 8.5 sacks. I mean, pretty talented on the perimeter. So when you look at one-on-one matchups and you say, all right, number of times you throw, we gave up 3 sacks, we want to keep it down. You know, we don't want to give up that many offensive line-wise. But, you know, so I don't know if I can – you know, and I would be honest with you, I don't know if I look and say, boy, the offensive line is getting worse. I think our perception is the offensive line is getting better. Now, at times, you know, like you said, Luke Boyko got walked back into the quarterback. Yes, that did happen. That did happen. So he's got to be more stout, and he'll get stronger and better at that. But for the most part, I think overall when we look at it, we've seen improvement by those guys.
People hate to hear that people are not receiving that well, okay, because like you said, people see 8 sacks, so offensive line cannot be playing well, cannot be getting better. In his case, sound like Gus Bradley as well assigned 3 to the offensive line, divvied up the blame. He said, obviously, Blake earlier in his comments was responsible for some of that. Let's go through here. Let's start with Jokel. How did Jokel play this week?
Okay. I mean, he's got to get better. And I think when Gus was talking about Luke Bowanko getting walked back, mm-hmm. I think he made a mistake there, and then I think he was meant to say Luke Jokel, because Jokel got walked back a couple times by Terrell Suggs.
Right.
In fact, one of the plays was actually a completion to Mercedes coming out of the end zone, and it was like third down, and Bortles got hammered by Timmy Jernigan, but he also got hammered by the back of Luke Jokel, which was an excellent throw by Bortles on that, but Jokel was very soft on that play. He was soft on a couple other plays that Blake Bortles felt pressure and escaped early, but Jokel had him and was giving up ground, but he still had control of Suggs. But, I mean, you would like to have a comfort level with your quarterback in the pocket that's not feeling that push to where he feels comfortable. And Jokel gave up some pushes. And he's going to get better. You know, I was actually yesterday looking at all of the starts that they have. And, you know, a lot of people have very high expectations for Luke Jokel because he's the second overall pick.
Sure.
And I get that. I get it. But he's got now 15 starts under his belt. You know, 15 starts. And name me another rookie tackle that has come into the league, even in a top pick situation, that has come in and played exceptionally well. The last one's probably Joe Thomas. I don't know if there's another tackle that's come in. Bocelli, Joe Thomas. John Ogden got to play guard for a year before he ended up moving to tackle.
Jake Long
came in and was not great his first year. Made the Pro Bowl, but I think that was a stretch that he made the Pro Bowl. He gave up some sacks in his rookie year. So it's not very common, and it's very special to find a guy that comes into the league at left tackle in his first year and has great success. And that's what we're essentially dealing with Luke Jokel. He's still in his first year. He's got to be better. I mean, there's no doubt that he's got to be better. And I think with an offseason to where he gets heavier, gets more strength, and then trusts his feet and then learns to use his hands better, he's going to be just fine.
Can he get all that accomplished in one offseason?
Absolutely, yes.
Does he have to get all that accomplished? If he doesn't get all that accomplished, are you still saying, well, he's a very young guy?
No, next year your expectations ramp up a little.
It's going to change.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be more of a, I'm not saying make or break, but he's got to put up more next year to make mm-hmm. you feel he's on the right
path.
He's got to
get better.
What about Zane Beatles?
Okay. I think the last couple weeks he's played better. You know, going back to watching him against the, in fact, yesterday went back and watched the Tennessee Titans game the first time around back in, what was that, October? He was terrible. I mean, terrible. And early in the season, he was terrible. I think he's played better lately. But he's been the one guy I think that's been the most disappointing out of all of them because, I mean, he's a veteran, you know, and he's the guy that you would expect to be a little bit of a consistent force up front. He hasn't been a consistent force up front. He was okay the other day, though.
What can he do in the offseason to improve?
Worry about himself instead of worrying about all these rookies that are beside him.
How much is that? Is he getting in trouble? Is he trying to cover for some of these guys?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the greatest way to lead is by performance. And I think when you come into that room and you've got Luke Jokel, who, you know, had one career start at left tackle going into the season, and you got a rookie center in Luke Bowanko and a rookie right guard and Brandon Linder and a right tackle and Sam Young, who I think at that point to start the season out when he started early on had, I think, four career starts under his belt. You know, you're so worried about
everybody
else.
It's like you're talking
else.
Less than 10 to start the season out of those four guys.
Yeah, out of those other four guys. I mean, so I think he probably kind of took a wrong approach this year in that he's worrying about everybody else and trying to be the leader and okay, we got to make sure that you do this and you do that. First thing you got to do is take care of your own front porch. If you don't take care of your front porch, how in the world are you going to end up building a house? You know, and I think that he made a mistake this year and that he was so kind of consumed with worrying about everybody else that he didn't take care of the most important thing to be a leader, and that's making sure that your performance is top notch.
All right, let's go to Bowanko.
He needs an off season of gaining some weight and gaining some strength. But out of all the rookie draft pick centers that I've watched this year, I think he might be the best. I think that he's got a great ability to get to the second level. He's extremely athletic. He can reach a shaded nose technique, which is probably the hardest thing to do for a center, especially a young center. But at times, he's a little soft, and also the awareness, the experience of anticipating games. When a guy does a certain thing, he needs to understand that his eyes need to go to a different area because this guy's doing that, which means another guy's probably doing this.
Right. And when you say soft, you're not talking about his approach to the game. You're not talking about his effort level. You're talking about sometimes he's physically outmatched.
Sometimes he is. But a lot of the times, being physically outmatched is not anticipating what's coming. So, for example, if there's a game coming and the guy in front of him is sitting there dancing on the line of scrimmage and not doing anything, experience will tell you if he's dancing, he's not coming, this guy is coming at me from the right. And so you can anticipate that and then meet the guy coming on the right with power and force. And you can see that his anticipation experience is not quite there to where he's not meeting or anticipating the next guy with power and force.
This is not a position you think they're going to look to upgrade.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Because people suggest that. They say, well, you know, we found Bowenko. He's a placeholder. Got him in the sixth round.
They're playing him out
of default.
You always are looking to upgrade.
Obviously.
I don't care but you've got a Hall of Famer.
Clearly. But I mean, when you're talking about high priority,
right,
like we're saying, hey, this is a danger position, that's not going to be the approach. If the opportunity presents itself, could they upgrade? Sure. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Brandon Linder, who you said
stud,
consistent again this week.
Yeah. I mean, not as good as the week before against Houston, but still
week in, week out, the best that they've had.
Absolutely.
And not a question.
Absolutely.
As far as that goes.
I know he had the ankle kind of towards the end of that game against the Baltimore Ravens, kind of got rolled up on from behind. Came back and ended up finishing the game, though. He is tough. He is strong. He's got a great knack and all the anticipation things that I'm talking about with Bowenko, because Bowenko now hasn't played as much as Linder. You know, Linder played at Miami from the get-go, pretty much played his whole time there. Bowenko was a guy that was playing at Virginia, some center, some guard, and didn't play his entire 4 years. You know, so Linder, I don't worry about whatsoever. But once Bowenko gets some of the things that Linder has, and that's experience and anticipation and some of the tricks of the trade, and that's probably the thing that's most impressive about Linder, is that he actually has a few tricks up his sleeve now. You know, whereas if a guy all of a sudden has him off balance, okay, instead of trying to fight back for balance, he's just taking the guy and letting him let himself get overpowered and then making a pile to make sure that the guy can't make the play. I mean, some of those things that he does are very veteran-like.
Yeah, use the guy's own momentum against himself kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly.
Very Karate Kid-esque, mm-hmm. I think, there, Tony. What about Sam Young at right tackle?
I thought that for the most part against Doomerville did really good, because Doomerville is – basically a smaller version of Dwight Freeney. Exceptional quickness. He very low to the ground, brings a surprising amount of power. I thought Sam Young did okay. He had a couple times to where he was a little soft, but when you're dealing with a guy like Doomerville to where you have to be aware of his speed and you're not the greatest of foot, you know, as far as your quickness and your balance, Sam Young is not Luke Jokel when it comes to feet. So you're more cautious about the speed and the get-off than you are the power. And so when all of a sudden Doomerville does bring power, it will catch you off balance, understandably, but you got to recover. And I thought Sam Young did a pretty good job in that game.
All right, there you go, five across.
And remember,
across.
Sam Young now has, you know, you look across the board, okay, across the board of this offensive line, and not looking at Zane Beadles, because Zane Beadles has plenty of career starts under his belt. You're not making excuses, okay, this guy's young and he's got to develop. Sam Young has 8 starts. Linder has 13 starts. Luke Bowenko has 12 starts, and Luke Jokel has 15 starts. Well, what do you expect? What do you expect out of guys across the board that have this amount of career experience? It takes time. It takes time, and it's going to take time for these guys. I'm not going to be sit there and Gus Bradley is not going to do this, and I'm certainly not going to do it because it would be lying. These guys here have potential, and you got to have patience with it. And if you don't have patience, you're going to end up making a rash decision that's going to cost your franchise in the future by spending money or doing something somewhere else that's not worth it. You have to have patience to be able to let young guys to develop. And what they have done offensively has never been done in the National Football League. Never. And so I give them credit for having the courage to do it. And it's going to take a lot of courage to fight through some of the times like it is right now where people are just being very critical of it. But you have to be able to be a person of conviction and the belief that you know that what they're getting now is going to help in the future.
He's Jeff Logman. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony and Lauren Brooks. It's Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. If you'd like to get in with Loggy, 641-1010. We've got this date in football history coming up, the Honda drive around the NFL. Logs also took a look at that Johnny Manziel tape.
Yes, I did.
From this week. We'll discuss that coming up and hear from Blake Bortles as well. If you'd like to get on board, you know how to do it. Don't forget, Haiku contest for a pair of tickets for Thursday night's game, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. Send a Jaguar-themed haiku on Twitter to me, at MD_1010XL. Email it to MikeD@1010XL.com or post it on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We continue on with Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Actually, quite a bit happened on this date in football history. 1962, New York Giant quarterback Y.A. Tittle set a single-season NFL touchdown passing record. How many do you think that mark was in 1962? Touchdown passes in the for the entire year was the all-time record. What do you got?
I guess
50-something.
36.
33. Because it's 55 now.
Yeah.
Manning said it, 55 now. Brady hit 50 a couple years ago was the record. Marino held it at 48 for since 1984.
Yeah.
Until,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Until,
I have that famous picture of Y.A. Tittle up in my house.
The mud picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the bleeding.
You know, the one record that I actually went and tried to find this week, and I did find it, because I was curious about, just because, you know, you allow 8 sacks, and all of a sudden your sacks are starting to creep up, and I started to wonder, okay, how many sacks did the Texans give up to David Carr?
I want to say it was 71 or...
Yeah, it was like in the 70 range, and I wanted to know what the record was for sacks allowed in a single season, and I think it's Randall Cunningham when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. It was over 100.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's, Tony, you can double check that. But
wow,
most
times sacked by a single team or a quarterback, yeah. I remember 70, I thought, boy, that's crazy. And
maybe I was reading it wrong, but.
I wonder, maybe, because I could have sworn when Carr got sacked, I thought he was sacked a record amount of times.
And I thought that was
his
too.
Rookie season. And I don't know if it's been topped since. I don't think it. Well, we'll see. We'll check that out. Also, this date, 1972, the Dolphins completed an undefeated regular season for the first time in league history, 14-0 at that time. And a year later, O.J. Simpson became the first NFL player to rush for 2,000 yards in a season as he went for 200 in the season finale against the New York Jets, 2,003 total yards. Birthdays on this date include the Fridge, Refrigerator Perry, born in 1962, Bart Oates, who played for the Giants and the 49ers, very good center, and his brother Brad, the two of them, both longtime linemen in both the USFL and the NFL, by the way.
I remember watching Michael Dean Perry and William the Refrigerator Perry play at Clemson,
mm-hmm.
You know, because my brother went to Virginia before I did. He was in George Walsh's first recruiting class in 1982. And so I watched, you know, Virginia play Clemson while I was in high school, and then eventually, you know, I myself went to Virginia as well. And I remember watching Michael Dean and William the Refrigerator Perry. They would roll them. You know, sometimes they were on the field together, but most of the time they just rotated them. Those two guys were the biggest freaks of nature I have ever seen play
really?
A college football game.
The ability to move at that size.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, and when when William got to the NFL – he was kind of a big guy, didn't move a whole bunch. He was lighter in college and could move better, like Michael Dean could. Watching how these guys could move at Clemson was unbelievable.
Well, there you go. By the way, you see Icky Woods last night. Speaking of a guy, he's put on a few pounds, but they had him on.
Well, he did. You could see him in the commercial.
Right. Well, they had him on the countdown set last night. And what's the line he's got in the commercial? Going to get some cold cuts, right? He said it's something about that. Somebody from all, I don't know, they had him on the set last night, and somebody from off camera threw him what is supposedly a package of cold cuts, and he spiked them. I don't know if he did anything else, but I guess they probably flew him in, gave him a nice little appearance money, and got to spike some sliced ham, Tony.
I know at least according to Pro Football Reference, David Carr's 2002 season is the record, was 76 times.
76,
sacked.
Okay.
Randall
okay.
Cunningham was sacked 72 times in 1986. Okay. Those were the only two players that have been sacked more than 70 times in a season. Now, I don't know if Randall Cunningham started every game You know, if there was a year where he got sacked, you know, 50 or 60 times and somebody else got sacked.
Right.
On top of that.
Would seem like a lot. I mean, if the record, because Carr played every game, I figure he did, at least his number one overall pick, and there are more games now than there used to be, I think it'd be hard pressed to find a team that gave up 100 sacks in the season. But regardless, here are the guys, by the way. There are 7 different quarterbacks who have thrown 40 or more touchdowns in a season. And, 3 of them did it twice. Of course, Peyton Manning has a record with 55, did that just last year. Tom Brady had it before him. Manning had it before him. So they went back and forth. Manning had broken in 2004 Dan Marino's at that time 20-year-old record, of 48. Drew Brees threw 46 in 2011. So got within striking distance. Same year, Aaron Rodgers threw 45. Marino's got another one. And again, considering the time he played, to have 2 of the top 10 seasons, still pretty good. He had 44 in 1986. Brees again in 2012 with 43. Matt Stafford in 2011 had 41. And Kurt Warner in the magical 1999 season had 41.
With the Rams.
As well, exactly. With the greatest show on turf. This state in football history brought to you by the best fence company of Jacksonville. Whether it's fencing for your home or your place of business, you're not going to find a better group who do a higher quality of work with great customer service. Call them, Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, and get a professional free estimate at your convenience at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this state in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Yeah, doing a little more research here. The 1986 Philadelphia Eagles did give up 104 sacks
that season.
Well,
there you go. Season. 104.
I don't know how many times it was Cunningham that took the brunt of that, but 104 in 1986. Arizona in 1997, second was 78.
He must have been the primary guy. That is such an aberration, though. I mean, when 78 is second, and you jump to 104 sacks, you think this line has problems.
Oh, my goodness. Dallas Cowboys running back DeMarco Murray had surgery yesterday to repair a broken bone in his left hand.
Oh, fantasy playoffs!
It is unclear if Murray will be forced to miss any time with that injury. Murray is leading the NFL in rushing with 1,687 yards. And if he plays the last two games, would still have a chance to join that elite club of 2,000-yard rushers. The Cowboys currently lead the NFC East by one game over the Philadelphia Eagles with just 2 weeks to play. Last night, the New Orleans Saints beat down the Chicago Bears by a final of 31-15 in a game that really wasn't ever that close. With the win, the Saints improved to 6-8 on the year, keeping the hope alive at least for an 8-8 winner in the NFC South. They are now a half game ahead of Carolina in the division, a game ahead of Atlanta, who they will play this Sunday in New Orleans. Atlanta still controls their own destiny in the South with games against New Orleans and Carolina to finish out the season. If the Falcons win both games, they would host a playoff game during Wild Card weekend as a 7-9 division winner.
Go, Smitty.
Which has everybody all up in, oh, it's terrible, you can't host a playoff game, this is awful.
Wouldn't it be awesome if they get to host Seattle? Like, Seattle has to go on the road and deal with that?
Well, the Seattle, if they had to go play New Orleans, is the reverse of when Seattle went 7-9 and they hosted New Orleans
That's right.
Defending Super Bowl champs and beat them. New Orleans would have the same exact opportunity to do the same thing to Seattle. I think Seattle is going to beat Arizona this week. I don't think that it'll be Seattle going on the road as the wild card.
What is Arizona on their third quarterback, right?
Yes. I think Logan Thomas probably played some snaps, but in terms of starting games this year, yes.
Ryan played a little. And I wouldn't be surprised if Logan Thomas, they have like a package of plays or something for him this week.
They've even said they probably will. They got to do something. And that's what
Coach
Arian
of the
said.
Year right there.
Said, look, we're just.
I said he should have been a coach of the year
several times. Yeah. They're just trying to scrape by with enough points right now. Their defense is playing very well. Dallas.
In that division now. I mean, look at the division that they played in for 2 years.
I hear you. I mean, I hear you.
And the job that Bruce Arians has done.
And now they're in the playoffs. San Fran's eliminated from the playoffs this year. But certainly we saw the Rams playing the best defense in the league for the 2 weeks prior to this past week. It still had a great performance. And Arizona said, all right, if we can't score more than 12 points, we'll just hold you to 6. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're figuring out what the number is every week, and they're holding you to less. You know, honestly, the team that could have home field throughout, if you look at it, Detroit is sitting there at 10-4, right?
Do you remember all the way back at the beginning of the year, and I said the most improved team in the National Football League this year will be the Detroit Lions because of Jim Caldwell?
I do not recall that.
I remember
because
that.
I block that. Out anything anyone says it's not me. but no, I absolutely believe you, and Tony's got your back on that. But they have, by two games, they have a better conference record than the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys have the tiebreaker over the Seahawks head-to-head. So there are a lot of teams that could still end up with home field throughout in the NFC playoffs, and I think it's going to be very important to have that this year. If you got to go to Seattle, I think you're going home the next week. I don't think you're advancing.
That's a tough place to play.
I think it is too. You know what? We'll table it for a second here, but we'll come back. I know you looked at the tape of Johnny Manziel. Want to get your opinion on what you saw in that, if there was any good to be found, and also hear a little bit from Blake Bortles. Take a couple of phone calls if we have time to get those in as well at 641-1010. So if you're on the line, hang in there. We will get to your calls coming up. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, and Lauren Brooks here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. T-Pain. He's in love with a stripper. So says T-Pain. Well, the pain in Blake's foot is just fine by Thursday night. You can leave the rest of your thoughts where they belong. All right? 641-1010 if you want to get in. Jeff, you took some time to watch the film of Johnny Manziel. How'd that go?
It was, it was interesting to watch it because, you know, when you watch the way that they ran their offense, you know, because the Jaguars, we obviously got a chance to see Cleveland here, and totally different. I mean, totally different offense. And, I kind of fault Mike Pettine for making the decision to switch to Johnny Manziel because, I mean, not only are you switching quarterbacks, you're switching the entire scheme. You go to go from Brian Hoyer to Johnny Manziel, totally different offense. That's not something that you do at midseason, so I kind of fault Mike Pettine for making that decision. That's something that you need to do off season to prepare the rest of your offense and the rest of your football team that Johnny's going to be our guy. And he looked like a boy among men. You know, I think is the best way to describe it. He looked indecisive. He looked small. He played small. He had a couple times where he displayed very good arm strength, where his footwork was good, and he actually stepped into the throws. But the problem with Johnny is that he does not step into many throws. Most things that he does are off script, and he's throwing off balance. And I think three of them, what do you have, three interceptions? Three of them were thrown off the back foot or from the run, and he got no velocity on the ball, and they were picked off easily. It was not surprising because I think when we go all the way back to the springtime and we were looking at a lot of these draft picks and I was watching these guys on college film, I said that Johnny Manziel, if I had the opportunity to draft Johnny in the third round, I would do it. I mean, and I would do it in the third round for a couple of reasons. One, it would create a lot of excitement. He's an electric player, and he's kind of a wild card. You know, could be great, could be terrible. And I did not think that he was a first-round caliber talent just because – how in the world can you run an offense where when the player you're talking about selecting, when he's at his best, it's off script? Well, how can everybody else be at their best, the other 10 guys, when one guy is at his best off script? Because all the other 10 guys got to be best when they're on script. And when you watch the way that the offense was run and you watch the way the guys protected and that the way guys ran routes, they were clearly – they were not in that corner of Johnny Manziel. They were almost, they looked lost. Guys were quitting on routes because they knew that Johnny wasn't going to end up throwing it to him. When Johnny was extending the play, it was almost like they were putting their hands up going, what the heck, man? Just stay in the pocket and throw it to me. I was open. You know, so it was not a good start for Johnny football.
No, that's the understatement of the day.
I think you made a big mistake in doing that because I know that it was a stretch to say that you were in playoff contention, but you were. And to make the switch to an unproven quarterback and change up your entire offense and sacrifice a season just so that you can get a look at your draft pick and ignore everybody else on that football team and their chances of making it to the playoffs, even though they might have been slim,
Well, if they win the game, they're 8-6, and they're—I mean—they're still alive.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, mathematically, they're still alive right now, which goes to show you how they've been able to win that game. And with Hoyer, now clearly Hoyer had not been playing great football, but when he was under center, they took apart Cincinnati the first time, and that was more, I think, what the defense was able to do against Cincinnati's offense. But in this case, I think that the offense never got started to the degree that it just it became impossible for the defense to do much of anything. They were right back out on the field.
Let's go all the way back to when we were having a conversation about at what point do you play Blake Bortles. And I said that you play a young quarterback when the locker room feels it's time. You remember that conversation
that
we
absolutely.
Had? Absolutely. And you could tell that when Blake came out of the preseason, I think the locker room was like, hey, you know, this kid's pretty good.
Right.
And then when you got into the regular season, you were like, okay, Chad Henne is Chad Henne. You make the switch because you could just tell that the way that other teammates were talking about Blake Bortles, the comments that Mercedes talked about, you know, that Blake Bortles is dope. He's got a great personality, loves the way he plays, and the way other players kind of their eyes brightened up, their face brightened up when they talked about Blake Bortles. When you have that, you realize the team is ready for a change of quarterback. You never got that impression when Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel were in that locker room that anybody was talking about, let's make the switch to Johnny football. In fact, you had players that were going to, in fact, the week before when they decided to stick with Brian Hoyer, that the coaches talked about how the input of the players, and Joe Thomas in particular, made the difference, and that's why they stuck with Brian Hoyer. So clearly Johnny football did not have any locker room backing to make that switch. So as an organization, why would you do that when you still had a playoff life that's got life?
Well, that's the question. Was it an organizational decision? Because it seems like a coach would not make that decision in that circumstance that you're laying out.
Yeah, I don't know who made that decision, but it was a bad one.
All right, there you go. A little look at the tape for Johnny Manziel. We'll hear from Blake Bortles coming up momentarily. A couple of phone calls here, 641-1010. Let's go to Ronald next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ronald. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up?
How about Bradley, his demeanor on the sideline? And I don't mean, you know, he has to dress players down, you know, and embarrass them in front of television, but I've just seen too many negative plays. This guy's constantly clapping. I mean, take Coughlin, for example, or Harbaugh, or any other coach. I mean, there are times when there's a bad play on the field, and, you know, they show it a little bit on their face, but this guy's constantly clapping on negative plays, whatever the play is. So I don't know whether he's a part-time motivational speaker. I mean, how do you think that? I mean, it doesn't play good with the fans. I mean, I know other people have called in about it, but I don't mean him to dress players down on the sideline. This guy's constantly clapping no matter what the play is.
All right, we got the gist. Let Jeff weigh in on this.
What the hell's wrong with clapping on the sideline trying to encourage your team?
Well, I think this is something Tony and I have talked about. You get to a certain point.
You start to analyze everything.
Look, I think it goes back to last year, the play where Andre Branch gave just a boneheaded play, gave up a free first down on a play where they got the turnover, and he comes over the sideline, and the fans, because they've seen Andre Branch make that kind of play two or three times, they want to see the head coach get on that guy and tear him apart like they've seen on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays for 50 years of watching football. And instead, this guy goes over to Andre Branch, puts his arm around his shoulder, and has a conversation with him about what happened on the field, mm-hmm. and then tells him to go over there for a little while, and then we'll see when you're going to get an opportunity to come back onto the mm-hmm. field. I think Branch and the other players respond to that from Gus Bradley more so than getting just reamed on the sideline. And I think the fans are still waiting for that first time where Gus just blows up on somebody. It can't be this real that he's that calm all the time. I know.
But here's the thing. Okay, you talk about, I mean, it was a great opportunity for the head coach to make himself look good, right? And to go ahead and rip a player, Andre Branch, last year. From that moment on, what has Andre Branch been?
He's been a better player.
He's been a better player.
Responded.
He's probably one of the great effort players that they have on defense. He's been productive making sacks. So how's that bad?
Seemed like it worked in his case. I don't even think that fans, now I can't speak for all of them. I don't think in their heart of hearts they think it necessarily would make a difference, but I think what it is a reflection of the frustration that fans are screaming at their TV. They're screaming that they want to see their anger. They're upset with the lack of performance expressed. They don't want to hear another, hey, we're getting better, we saw some good things. That's Gus's approach, always focus on the positive, right?
Well, he doesn't necessarily focus on the positive, but he wants to continue to encourage the positive. And then he also talks about having humility to where you can absolutely understand what your weaknesses are and continue to work on them. And that's what you want. Now, as a head coach with such a very young offense and a young quarterback, you have to have patience. And it's hard. I mean, it's easy. The easy thing to do would be to show anger and to be like Tom Coughlin on the sideline when something bad happens. That's easy to do. It's harder to be consistently encouraging for a group that's very young. That's the hardest thing in the world to do as a head coach. So for me, I'm giving him credit because he is staying positive and he is being honest in his evaluation. You know, there's not one press conference that I have seen on a Monday all season long to where Gus has not been straightforward with the fans or with the media. Never once. Now, there's been times where he has shied away or has, I would say, protected his young quarterback at some criticism because he understands the process of what it is. You know, and to me, that's harder to do than it is to get in front of the camera like a Jay Gruden did and rip the quarterback. Now, so now all of a sudden, if Gus Bradley had been like Jay Gruden, where's Jay Gruden at right now? Jay Gruden's having to play RG3 this week.
Right.
Okay, so what did Jay Gruden accomplish a couple weeks ago by calling out RG3 in public? I'm okay with him saying, hey, look, you know, being critical of RG3 to a point, but Jay Gruden went over the top. And now all of a sudden he's got to deal with this quarterback being a starter again. Has that benefited him what he did a few weeks ago? No, he took the easy way out and made himself look good.
And I think you get to, look, Gus talked about this week following the game and again yesterday as well. The idea of he likes to see how these guys respond to the negative plays. And I think that's part of why the caller's complaining about the class. I think that's part of it. He's like, all right, we all know you screwed up. We all saw it. We saw one went bad on that play. How are you going to respond? How are you going to react? And I don't think tearing a guy down in that situation gets them in the right frame of mind to be best suited to go back out there and respond to whatever mistake they just made. Clap and say, look, come on, you got to be better than that. I know you're better than that.
You know what happens, though? I mean, he may be clapping now, but when you get to the offseason, you get the opportunity to get a player to take a player's place that's been making mistakes. You think he's going to be clapping in the offseason?
Oh,
no, he's fine. He's going to continue to. No, you're going to replace him.
I honestly think that if people think this through, this is more about their emotional reaction to how they feel, and they want to see that expressed because they're tired. When they're like, this is not good enough. Okay, you're not asking me to pay rookie prices. I'm paying full price. You're 2-12. You've gotten worse than last year, at least record wise. That's what a lot of people are thinking. And I'm upset. I'm frustrated. I'm pounding my fist every single week. I think they just want some of them. Just want to see that expressed, and because to them, they can maybe
they want to see what they're feeling expressed.
Yes,
on by the coach.
Yes.
And by the players.
Yes,
I get it.
Yeah, and look, intellectually, you may know that it's not going to benefit the team to have just a crazy show of emotion, but I don't think this is about that. I think it's just, you know, a frustration thing that's boiling over. Let's go to Brian up next here on 1010XL. Hey, Brian, how are you? Oh, I'm sorry. Who is it, Lauren? Matt. I'm sorry. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How are y'all? Look, I understand that we haven't had a super competitive team for the last several years. I go to all the home games. I know it's more enjoyable when they're winning, but it's seriously starting to drive me nuts that these fans, almost the way they speak about their frustration, almost like they're threatening the franchise with their lack of loyalty, or like the fans have this right to, we're supposed to be in the top third of the league every single year. There's 32 teams. I know enough about math to know that they all can't go 12-4 every single year. Be patient. You know, even in the worst case scenario, say it takes another 10 years. Buffalo just did this for 10 years. Now they're decent. Very few teams are able to switch to a new quarterback and never skip a beat. Green Bay's done it, but not many teams do it. And, you know, and wait till our next ride. It could be 5 or 10 years, but when we get the man, it's going to be fun again, and it's going to be a hell of a ride, and just sit back and enjoy it.
Well, that, and that's a great, patient, long-term view. A lot of fans say, the hell are you talking about, wait 10 years? I mean, look, it, there's something to be said. Yeah, you can't be top third of the league every year. Well, unless you've got a QB that, like Tom Brady, puts you constantly in the top third of the league. Can you not be bottom third of the league every single year? And that's where the Jags have been now for too long. They've been drafted in the top 10 for too long. And it, people are saying, look, I get it. Patience. You're not going to win it all every year. Do we have to be among the worst teams in the National Football League year in, year out? Because that's all they've seen for the last several years, Jeff.
No, I think that next year, your expectations as a fan and my expectations are elevated. Now, I'm not saying, look, I expect them to be a playoff team, but I don't expect them to be a bottom feeder next year. I think next year the wins start to have to come, and I expect them to come. And if they don't come next year, I'm going to be highly disappointed. You know, this year, when they made the commitment to a young quarterback, I went, uh-oh, here we go. And then all of a sudden you make a commitment not only to a young quarterback, but being young across the board on offense, you know, it was going to be a rough ride. You were hoping that you would start to see that upward hill climb at this point of the season, but you haven't. And that's probably, for me, is a little disappointing that you're not starting to see progress offensively. But at the same time, I also understand the process and that it does take time, particularly with a young quarterback. And right now, you're watching a quarterback struggle. That's been the biggest, I think, hurdle for this team to overcome in the last 3 to 4 weeks has been the play of the quarterback. Because I think there are some components around him that are getting better. But right now, it looks like that he has regressed. But that's part of the process. It's up and down for a young quarterback, and hopefully it will start to stabilize.
We asked this yesterday. If you're Jed Fish, there's a lot of people. I mean, he is probably the guy that more people call for his job than anybody because the offense is not doing anything, okay? If you're Jed Fish, what do you try differently, if anything? What do you, Jeff Logman, do differently here?
Well, I think, for one, the whole read option stuff, that they're the packages that they're doing, I'm throwing them out. I'm throwing them out completely. I want my quarterback running, handing the ball off. I want my quarterback play action, and I want him in the shotgun, getting the ball in his hands with his eyes down the field immediately. A lot of that read option look stuff to where he's faking handoffs or faking this and faking that to where his eyes aren't on the field immediately, I'm thrown out. I want my quarterback to see the field. I'm gonna have him hand the ball off, play action, and drop back pass.
But in terms of the read option, I mean, they're really, that's a running play more than anything, right? I mean, so, I mean, well, I guess there are occasions where you can pull it out and
it's a running play and it works. And look, you know, look, remember the big game that he had against the New York Giants that helped elevate them? I mean, it was a positive play, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Like, because if you're talking about you want your guy to turn around and hand the ball off, well, his eyes are not downfield when he hands it off. What's the difference? Here's just a saying, instead of I'm just going to hand it right to you, if this defensive end gives me the lane, I got an easy 10-yard pickup. I mean, those seem to me, as a layman watching football, those have been some of the more successful plays they've had at times.
Right. And that's one of the things that will be successful for them right now. But in 6 or 7 years, do you want your franchise quarterback doing a read option?
Understood. But is that what it's all about? I mean, is it all about just pure future development? Are you trying to win this football game today? And it's not like they're running a read option 25 times a game. They're sprinkling in a handful of these plays, right? So are, you know, Jed Fish has got to try to put up enough points today, Thursday night, to win that football game against the Tennessee Titans. So where does that balance come in?
It's hard, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. To me, I would, me personally, I don't have an issue with the read option plays because it's a sprinkling of them, I find, more than anything.
Yeah, but it's to me, I'm not a big fan of the packages off of it. You know, the passes that are off of that. I want my quarterback to have the ball in his hands, see the field.
We hear tempo. I hear tempo a lot.
And I'm not saying change the entire offense because, I mean, that's not it. But I think the percentage of the play, you could probably tweak them a little bit.
All right. In terms of playing up tempo, right, how it, should they be doing more of that, or is it difficult to do when you're giving up a lot of sacks and then you're playing, you know, long down and distance?
I'm okay with the up-tempo to some extent. And the reason that the up-tempo stuff can be good for a young quarterback is that it keeps defenses from substituting, and it typically makes them a little bit more simple on defense when you're running up-tempo because they can't make the adjustments and get all these crazy coverages called when you're running up tempo. A defensive coordinator, when he sees up tempo, is going to like one of three base packages that he's going to run. And that simplifies things for a young quarterback. I'm okay with that.
So you would you do more of that, more than what they're doing?
I don't say more of it, but I mean, I'm not against running it however much you want to run it. But I don't think more is necessarily a good thing until you can start to actually make first downs consistently.
All right, let's take a time out here. If you want to get in, we'll try to squeeze in a few on the other side. Take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today as well, asking you which positions do not need any upgrading this all season, at least in your eyes. We'll get into that and remind you about that haiku contest. Got a pair of tickets we'll give away tomorrow to the Jags and the Titans on Thursday night. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Cry tough, Tony. Poison. Can't get enough poison. Can't get enough hair band on the show. All right, we've got a giveaway for you. This is that season.
It is.
I believe it's the first day of Hanukkah, I was told yesterday.
Yeah, I knew it was this week.
I think it's today. Happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish listeners out there. We've got a $25 gift card to Levy Jewelers, located on the Circle and Under the Clock at the St. John's Town Center, Jacksonville's exclusive provider of Breitling watches, and where you'll find the best selection of jewelry and timepieces this holiday season. Whatever the holiday for you, if you want that $25 gift card to Levy Jewelers, all you have to do is call Lauren Brooks right now at 641-1010. We'll take caller number three. It's that simple. Get on board. Let's get a couple of calls in for Jeff Loggeman before we look at the fan feedback spotlight, starting with Robert. Robert, thanks for hanging on. What can we do for you?
Hey, it's good to hear y'all. You know, one thing that I was thinking about before y'all went to break was, you know, a lot of people talk about the Patriots being the model for our Jaguars. And if people remember correctly, before they got Tom Brady, they had a couple little sprinkled in things when they got Parcells and everything. But they were, I mean, just terrible for about 10 or 13 years. I mean, not even relevant, you know, from their run from the 85 Super Bowl all the way up until, you know, kind of when they got Parcells. And you know, the Jaguars, they had early success, and I think that kind of when Loggeman was here and with other players, they had an early success that kind of, I think, spoiled the fans around here that they were going to be there all the time.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with being spoiled as a fan. I mean, I'm all for it. You know,
there's a difference between being once every 8 years.
He brings up a great point about the Patriots and then how they really became relevant when they got Tom Brady.
Well, they went to the Super Bowl with Drew Bledsoe in the mid-90s, too.
Right. They didn't win.
No, but that's relevant.
I know what your point is, and they had a quarterback in Drew Bledsoe, and then all of a sudden, then you got a little bit better quarterback in Tom, well, not a little bit better, a lot
right.
better quarterback in Tom Brady.
Sure.
And you got a heck of a coach.
And he's kept them there.
And he's kept them there year in and year out. And if you go and you look at the history of the National Football League, how many Hall of Fame coaches are in the hall without a Hall of Fame quarterback?
Right, right.
There ain't many.
No, it's that's okay. Pretty key.
And that is.
We had a guy tell us on the post game the Jags should have ignored offense for the last 2 years, just built the best defense in the league. Right, which I feel like they built one that's getting a lot better. It's, you know, it's significantly improved.
The defense is playing pretty well. The one area that it needs to have improvement at is. Hands that are touching the balls in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. Not making plays on those. Not getting the passes.
Five interceptions or something
right.
on the air. That's not enough.
Way too few, and several of those on deflected balls too. But no, I'm with. If you find the right quarterback, he can keep you in that double digit win territory, depending on your division. Not necessarily by himself, but pretty close to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you almost can count on 8-8. With certain quarterbacks, no matter what the talent is around them. And then if you add a few pieces, you get up to 10, get up to 12. Now you're talking about getting a bye and all that stuff. Let's get one more in here. By the way, Steve won the $25 gift certificate to Levy Jewelers. Let's go to Jay up next before we check in on the fan feedback spotlight. Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm pretty good, guys. Guys, I just feel sorry for the season ticket holders because – I feel like it's sort of like an insult to their intelligence to think that this guy, Gus Bradley, is going to turn this into a winner. is very evident that he doesn't have the temperament, nor does he have the qualities that it takes to be a head coach.
Now, Jay, let me ask you this. What qualifies you to have that opinion in an expert capacity?
Well, because you know what? It qualifies me
Not you know what. What qualifies you to be an expert on evaluating a coach?
Because I've played the game before and I know what a good coach sounds like.
Well, Al Bundy played it in high school too.
Okay, and he does not have the temperament of a coach. He is not a head coach.
Does he have a similar temperament to Pete Carroll? That's what everyone says. Did Pete Carroll do okay?
Pete Carroll holds his people accountable. Pete Carroll knows the ins and outs and the details of football. This guy does not. He's a cheerleader. Come on, he's a glorified cheerleader, man. Let's stop insulting people with this ridiculousness, man.
Let's stop insulting people.
You're insulting me with an opinion like that, to act as if you know from afar. That's insulting.
You've played football yourself.
Yeah.
Jeff.
A little bit.
At the professional level.
Played under Pete Carroll.
Is Gus Bradley, does he have the wrong temperament? Can he succeed with his
Gus Bradley and Pete Carroll are very similar.
Very similar. But Pete Carroll, as we found out from Jay, knows the ins and outs of what it takes to be a good coach.
Right.
Whereas Gus Bradley is apparently clueless to those things, and he is not anything but a cheerleader. Will your comment on that?
And saying that you played high school football does not qualify you as having an expert opinion.
All right, then. Now, you're welcome to your opinion. In this room on Tuesdays, it's not going to qualify as an expert opinion, I don't believe, over the guy sitting across from me. However, look, doesn't mean Gus Bradley's going to turn out to be the right guy to lead the Jags to the promised land.
What's more important is, does Blake Bortles have what's necessary to be a great quarterback in this league to evaluate Gus Bradley? Okay, let's evaluate Bill Belichick. What Jay is saying was probably said about the same exact fashion when Bill Belichick was in Cleveland.
Sure.
Okay, when Bill Belichick goes to New England and has Tom Brady, and all of a sudden, Bill Belichick is Yoda. Okay? So, let's all take this with a grain of salt.
I get you. What you're saying, well, can Blake Bortles give Gus Bradley the required
the
smarts?
The greatest coaches in the National...
Might be really good.
The greatest coaches in the National Football League are the ones that have great players.
All right, let's move off of that for a moment.
And they're working to get them.
Let's work on the fan feedback spotlight. Here, Tony, we asked him, what positions do not need upgrading for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Got a variety of answers.
Yes, we did. From Simon, just the defensive line. From Dusty, number one, cornerback. Number two, quarterback. Number three, defensive tackle. Hashtag kicker seemed too easy. From Harold, we got the hardest part about building a franchise is finding a good quarterback, and most people believe that Bortles is that guy. From Eric, quarterback, defensive tackle, kicker, and punter, that's about it. Need linebacker, safety, O-line, and running back most. From Duval Doom, long snapper, baby, roll damn Jaguars. From at Irish Jaguar, we got every position needs to play better, be it a new player or an improved player, except maybe defensive tackle. From Brandon, right guard, quarterback, and we can never break up Broanko. And from Brian, we got cornerback and wide receiver, invested a lot on wide receiver last year, and cornerback has good depth. And from Cam, kicker, right guard, middle linebacker, weak side linebacker.
Did he just say right guard?
He did. Cornerback and defensive tackle.
Okay. Do not need an upgrade.
Yeah, these are positions people feel are good on
the
team.
And when we say, as you said earlier, you can always upgrade everybody. Everybody can play better. You can have internal upgrades. Blake Bortles, we hope, will upgrade himself.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about here, for the sake of this, what areas do you say we don't need to rush out and say, we got a problem. We have to find our quarterback. We have to find our right guard. We have to find our defensive tackles. I feel like there's certain positions like that where they feel like, hey, if something falls in your lap or the opportunity comes along and you can get better, fine, but it's not a crisis-type situation. I loved hearing Roy Miller last week, and we played this on the pregame, say he doesn't know, you know, where it stands in terms of negotiations, but never wants to play in another city again, wants to make
Roy's not going
permanent
anywhere.
Home here. Right, which you love, though, because here's a guy playing very good football, and I don't know what the market is for a space-eating defensive tackle, but he's coming into the prime of his career. He's like 27 years old, having a very good, healthy season, and he loves everything that's happening with this franchise and wants to be a part of it and thinks they can win long-term here and wants to, as he said, retire as a Jaguar, you know, make his home in Jacksonville, the whole nine yards. You'll like that because I do think that, that's an impact that Gus Bradley and the whole circumstance that they've created. And I know it doesn't wins are better, but everything that we've talked about, how he hasn't lost the team, if you are looking for that silver lining, he hasn't lost the team. They continue to play hard. They want to play for Gus Bradley. I don't think they question whether or not he has the temperament for the job. Wins and losses ultimately decide his fate,
absolutely,
Gus Bradley. So, you know, there are coaches that have the same temperament and different temperaments to succeed and fail in equal measure. And like you said, if you get the right players, that goes a long way to making you have the right coach.
It helps.
Right? All right. That does it for us. Don't forget, haiku contest tomorrow. We'll elicit or enlist Mark Long to help us decide a winner on this. But send a Jaguar-themed haiku today. You can tweet me at MD_1010XL, email MikeD@1010XL.com, or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page a Jaguar-themed haiku, five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables, take you back to high school English. And the best one, the one we like the best, will award you a pair of tickets to Thursday night's game, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. That'll do it for us today. For Jeff Loggeman, for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime. Coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.